by a silver sea. For years, the fairy child had come to him, where others saw but Georgie Babbitt. She discerned gallant youth. She waited for him in the darkness beyond mysterious groves. When at last he could slip away from the crowded house, he darted to her. His wife, his clamoring friends, sought to follow, but he escaped. The girl fleet beside him, and they crouched together on a shadowy hillside. She was so slim, so white, so eager. She cried that he was gay and valiant, that she would wait for him, that they would sail.
Rumble and bang in the milk truck.
Babbitt moaned, turned over, struggled back toward his dream. He could see only her face now, beyond misty waters.
Furnace man slammed the basement door. Dog barked in the next yard.
As Babbitt sank blissfully into a dim, warm tide, the paper carrier went by whistling and the rolled-up advocate thumped the front door. Babbitt roused, his stomach constricted with alarm. As he relaxed, he was pierced by the familiar and irritating rattle of someone cranking a Ford.
Snapper! Snapper! Snapper!
Himself a pious motorist, Babbitt cranked with the unseen driver. With him, waited through taut hours for the roar of the starting engine. With him, agonized as the roar ceased and again began, the infernal patient, a round, flat sound, a shivering, cold morning sound, a sound infuriating and inescapable. Not till the rising voice of the motor told him that the Ford was moving was he released from the panting tension. He glanced once at his favorite tree, elm twigs against the gold patina of sky, and fumbled for sleep as a drug. He, who had been a boy, very credulous of life, was no longer greatly interested in the possible and improbable adventures of each new day. He escaped from reality till the alarm clock rang at 7:20. 3. It was the best of nationally advertised and quantitatively produced alarm clocks, with all modern attachments, including cathedral chime, intermittent alarm, and phosphorescent dial. Babbitt was proud of being awakened by such a rich device. Socially, it was almost as credible as buying expensive cord tires. He sulkily admitted now that there was no more escape. But he lay and detested the grind of the real estate business, and disliked his family and disliked himself for disliking them. The evening before, he had played poker at Virgil Gunch's till midnight, and after such holidays he was irritable before breakfast. It may have been the tremendous home-brewed beer of the Prohibition era, and the cigars to which that beer enticed him. May have been resentment of return from this fine, bold man-world to a restricted region of wives and stenographers and of suggestions not to smoke so much. From the bedroom beside the sleeping porch, his wife's detestably cheerful, "Time to get up, Georgie boy!" and the itchy sound, the brisk and scratchy sound of combing hairs out of a stiff brush. He grunted. He dragged his thick legs and faded baby blue pajamas from under the khaki blanket. He sat on the edge of the cot, running his fingers through his wild hair, while his plump feet mechanically felt for his slippers. He looked regretfully at the blanket, forever a suggestion to him of freedom and heroism. He'd bought it for a camping trip which had never come off. Symbolized gorgeous loafing, gorgeous cursing, virile flannel shirts. He creaked to his feet, groaning at the waves of pain which passed behind his eyeballs. Though he waited for their scorching recurrence, he looked blurrily out at the yard. It delighted him, as always. It was the neat yard of a successful businessman of Zenith. That is, it was perfection. It made him also perfect. He regarded the corrugated iron garage. For the 365th time in a year, he reflected, "No class to that tin shack. Have to build me a frame garage. But by golly, it's the only thing on the place that isn't up to date." While he stared, he thought of a community garage for his acreage development, Glen Oriole.